Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2017 film American Assassin. Directed by Michael Cuesta and based on the novel by Vince Flynn.
The late Vince Flynn.
Yes. Turns out he's very late. He died in like 2013, right?
Yes.
He did 13, something like that. But
Mitch Rapp novels.
Yeah, he did 13 Mitch Rapp novels. And then there have been another author who has since taken on the Mitch Rapp universe.
Yes. And to be fair, Vince Flynn wrote other books too.
But oh, yeah.
The Mitch Rapp ones are what I know. Because I've read all of, I've listened to all of them on audiobook, so.
Let's start there. Do you recommend them?
Yes and no.
Are they entertaining?
They're entertaining.
Yeah, that's all. That's what
however,
I want.
Yeah. Well, they have a very, I have to tread delicately through the sentence. They're a little bit biased against the Middle East and Middle Eastern culture.
Sure.
So, if you go into it knowing that it's going to be a little bit racist, perhaps against terrorists and glorifying terrorists more as Muslim and Middle Eastern than American, then that's fine. Then you'll do fine. If you are offended by that kind of sensibility, then the novels are not for you. Because I think that Vince Flynn had a very specific dislike. So.
Well, yeah. He definitely had a viewpoint. In fact, I actually, the way I found out that Vince Flynn had passed away was today. I actually was considering looking up just the phrase I was going to use on Google was, is Vince Flynn a bad guy? Just to figure out, is he one of these like QAnon people who's also an author? But I don't know. It turns out he died well before all that started. So,
you didn't know he was dead?
Well, no, because I've never read any of his books before, but I've seen them. You know, it's a popular series, and I see it on Audible all the time. And it seems like something that our mom would read, if she hasn't actually. It's the type of thing she read when I was a kid.
I got her going on Audible. I'm pretty sure she's listened to a bunch of them on Audible, too. I listened to a couple on Audible, but I've been getting them from the library Audible now, so... Yeah. The thing I like about the novels, the reason that I like these kinds of novels, because I'm also, there's another author, and I will forget his name, of course, Brad Thor, maybe? Scott Horvath novels,
right.
Which is similar kind of anti-terrorist, secret service, government agent kind of guy. Same kind of premise. It kind of has a whole bunch of books in a series, too. And I like series. Because much like I'm going to bring this to Star Trek, because I read a lot of Star Trek books, too, growing up. The reason I like these is because the universe is after the first book you read, right? The universe itself kind of has a setting. Now, granted, in the Star Trek universe books, there's all kinds of free license because it's all made up. But In the Vince Flynn novels and the Brad Thor novels, the author is singular. It's a singular author. Now it's not, but it was for Vince Flynn, obviously. But the universe is crafted in a way and there's characters that are recurrent. And so you don't have to get refamiliarized with the characters constantly. You're not like, you're not picking up a new book and you have all these new characters. So in some ways you get some back history and it helps ease you into the next story. Now, granted, the authors do a good job kind of condensing a little bit in the beginning of each book, I think, to kind of give you some backstory and give you some history so that you're not completely blind if you have come into it on the second, third, or 15th book. But for the most part, they're sequential. So
if you were diving in like me, if I was diving in new, would you start with that first book that was when, like, by publish date?
Yeah.
Okay. Because this is like the 10th book or something, right?
No. This is like a melange of books because...
Oh, okay.
So there were elements in the movie there were several elements in the movie that came from several different books.
Okay. All right.
The Mitch Rapp in the novel world, his wife, fiance, girlfriend, and I don't remember who she was in the book, the first book, she was killed in the 1989 Lockerbie 103 flight.
Yes. Okay.
Bombing. So that's one element. And so he was young and had training with Stan Hurley, and he was brought in by, not by Irene Kennedy, but by, I just forgot his name, Thomas Stansfield, who is the director.
Okay.
So they were kind of friends, and Irene came in later. The nuclear bomb in the ocean thing, mm-hmm. I think that happened in one of the books, but I think it was far later.
Okay.
So this is and the telling of the story of, like, the killing of his girlfriend is completely different, obviously, because she's not in a plane. She died from being shot. And so he didn't come in. So the gravity of how he came to it and what drove him, by the time he's old enough to be in current day, he's had a lot of victories under his belt. And he's super knowledgeable. He's older.
Yeah.
But he's knowledgeable and he gets stuff done.
Because you're introduced to him as a fully formed agent.
Yes.
Okay.
You're introduced to, I think the first book kind of talks a little bit about his past, but it goes into current. It's at the time the book was written, it's quote unquote current day. So all of that stuff from 1988 was at least 10, 15 years in the past. The movie, it was a fine movie.
So here's the knock on Vince Flynn as far as him as a writer. I think he was, obviously he was a successful author, right? I mean, he sold a lot of books.
Yeah.
I think he was basically thought of as somebody who could write, like a nice fast paced thriller action book, but it wasn't like it was great literature.
It was pulpy and they're formulaic. It's the tension that you get is very often, you know, the character, you know, most of the characters aren't going to get killed off, right? He's not going to kill off Mitch. But you have that with modern day TV shows, right? Unless you're Game of Thrones, where you don't usually kill off main characters who are stars.
Well, that's when I grew up with the Clive Cussler novels with Dirk Pitt.
Sure.
And that's the same sort of thing. Although Clive Cussler went one stranger, I guess, and his novels ended up getting further and further into the future, and he would change things, like historic things, that made it like an alternate universe, because I think during one of the Dirk Pitt adventures or the Numa adventures or whatever, he at the end of it was Canada like merging with America, and they called it the United States of Canada. And so those sort of like, you know, earth-changing events have to stay in that universe. And so it kind of went far afield. And that, I think that's about the time, unrelated to that specific incident, where I kind of drifted into nonfiction for quite a while. So coming back to fiction books, I think the next series like this I read was a bunch of the Kay Scarpetta books, which is also, you know, you're not going to get rid of Kay Scarpetta, the Patricia Cornwell novels. Like, you're not going to get rid of them.
I'm not familiar with them, but
she's a, Kay Scarpetta is a, it's a coroner, medical examiner, but it's got thriller elements and, gotcha. Yeah. And turns out Patricia Cornwell, she had a affair with an FBI agent, and I think the wife tried to kill them both or something. I read a nonfiction book about that. That's all. Anyway,
did Clive Cussler, is he the one that wrote Raise the Titanic?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am familiar with some of.
Oh yeah,
readers.
Yeah. But he has. I mean, there were a ton of those books.
But I've read a bunch of.
By the way, Sahara, which is stars Matthew McConaughey and Steve Zahn.
Mm-hmm.
Also a Dirk Pitt book, the worst. It is a bad movie, like one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
And it's a modern very day sad. Ishtar.
Yeah, and Clive Cussler is also passed. So, you know.
I've read tons of like James Patterson books too, which are pulpy.
Yeah.
Well, and of course he has different characters. He has different storylines. So,
and then Robert.
And of course,
Ludlum
now he doesn't even he doesn't even write his own books. You know, he puts his name on them, but he's not writing them.
Yeah, exactly.
It just irks me. If you're gonna just let somebody else write your book for you in your form, and you're just gonna look at it and be like, nah, okay, your name doesn't go on top.
As soon as I started seeing James Patterson ads on TV, I'm like, oh, this is an industry now. This isn't just, you know. And I mean, good for him, I suppose. But yeah, it's you're selling the brand, you know.
Well, he sold multiple screenplays.
Sure.
His book. So, I mean, he's got to have plenty of money.
Because
James Patterson, you know, I read, he did that Kennedy family book, which was actually pretty impressive. So,
well, and you know, if I was a author that hadn't been widely read, I'd love to co-write a book with James Patterson. James Patterson and Eric Anderson present Scruffy the Brain Eating Dog, a children's adventure. Whatever. But so anyway, back to this kind of movie. One of the things that it was also, this movie was compared to Jason Bourne, like the Robert Ludlum novels. It was compared
kind of
like Bourne Light.
It would be Bourne before he had any training.
Yeah.
But Mitch Rapp never gets any programming. He never has any special skills.
Exactly.
And through the series, he never, the novels, again, I'm only referring to the novels because the movie is to the books as kind of like World War Z, the movie was to the book. It's kind of the same universe, but not really. So close. But Mitch Rapp never develops super skills. He just develops his own skills, and his own skills were gotten because he was pissed off at the guys who killed his love, basically.
Yeah, so he goes training. So, I mean, well, Jason Bourne starts out, that's a whole nother thing where it's like, you know, he's got the whole element of not knowing who he is, which is a great...
Well, but he's also programmed with all the kinds of skills and all these, you know, he's got military training and tactics that Mitch never, I mean, he may have gone through military training eventually, but he didn't start with them.
Did you read any of the David Morrell books, like The Brotherhood of the Rose, or particularly Mm-mm. The Fraternity of the Stone?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Fraternity of the Stone is like, if you combine this and The Da Vinci Code, and I highly recommend it as a real fun read. I mean, David Morrell, he one among the things he read was, or he wrote was First Blood. So he had a lot of, turns out First Blood is an interesting story. The Rambo character changed, obviously, but, you know, the whole thing of John Rambo and, you know, being a vet too. Anyway, it's all very interesting. He had a couple books in the very beginning about like sort of loners who go out into the woods. That was his sort of thing. But then he kind of got into this whole, like I learned a lot about the Da Vinci Code, conspiracies, not from Dan Brown, but from David Morrell.
So David Morrell has a whole, there are a whole bunch of books.
Oh yeah. He's a very prolific author.
Is there a specific series?
If you start with the Brotherhood of the Rose, that introduces you to one character. And then Fraternity of the Stone, which you don't have to read the Brotherhood of the Rose first, but then there's the League of Night and Fog that brings those two characters together. And there may be another book that brings those characters together.
Oh, none of those are available at my library. So there's another Murder as a Fine Art.
No, that sounds like a anthology.
Inspector of the Dead, Ruler of the Night. So the series one, Creepers. Two, and three.
There's Urban Adventurers, Creepers. No, I haven't read them.
But... none of those.
Okay.
Anyway.
So
Vince Flynn.
Well, okay. So actually, back to, again, today's synopsis is brought to you by Wikipedia. Wikipedia, it's a start. Because IMDb's plot synopsis was so bad, it was short, and also it referred to Michael Keaton's character multiple times as Dan Hurley instead of Stan Hurley.
Oh, man. Which also... it was really jarring for me because I had this mental picture of Stan built up from 13 or I don't know how many books I read, but I had this mental picture built up in my head from the descriptions in the book. Right.
Sure.
And then Michael Keaton gets shoehorned in. I'm like, it kind of wrecked my brain for a while.
This isn't the 6'3" black man I had grown to know as Stan.
And then at one point I wrote, oh, in the middle of the movie, Keaton was doing Keaton face.
Yes.
So it was really distracting. He did a fine job, by the way. He does crazy very well. So
this is the first time you saw the movie?
Yeah.
Also, me too. And what did you think? Just your initial reaction.
It was fine. It was a fine movie. I mean, it was just an action movie, really. I mean, I went into it knowing it wasn't going to be like the book. So I lowered my expectations, which I think did it some service. It was entertaining. It wasn't too terribly patronizing, I don't think. Because it wasn't following the book, I couldn't really guess where it was going, which was fine. That kind of added to a little more enjoyment on my part. But it has some problems.
Sure. I think I felt the same way. There were two things that distracted me greatly during the movie, and we'll talk about it, but just the overall thing, I mean, again, it's over the top, it's, you know, it's kind of like all the series we just talked about there, you know, at the end when you're trying to save the world, you know, it's kind of goofy, but I thought the action scenes were okay. It wasn't a Jason Bourne movie for sure, you know, it wasn't a Mission Impossible movie. But it was decent. And, you know, everybody kind of held their own acting wise. It wasn't too bad. And there was some familiar faces, which I enjoyed. And that's my problem. And we'll get into the plot here in a second, but some faces were familiar because they looked so much like other people. Like, it was so distracting, but we'll get there.
Okay.
Are we ready to dive in?
Yeah.
Actually, the director, Michael Cuesta, has directed lots of TV, including lots of episodes of Homeland, Dexter, and 6 Feet Under. Two shows I've seen that I love, and one show that I'm told is very good.
And supposedly the second movie will be out 2023.
That was the design, I'm sure. I mean, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's not a surprise since... again, the novels are serialized. I can't imagine. The movie, I think, was budgeted at $33 million. It eventually made like $67 million.
Yeah.
So not a blockbuster, but I mean, for a Michael Keaton flick and a bunch of other people that
aren't
going to get paid a lot of money.
Exactly.
I mean, to me, Michael Keaton was probably the most expensive part of this movie.
Oh, yeah. And also the most expendable in the next movie. Like, having him around is important, but not important enough that if he decides he wants to get $1 billion, you just don't write his death.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't follow the novels, he's not important.
Yeah.
And again, they don't have to, because this is clearly its own universe. It's not a novel play.
And it's not like there's lots of deep character development. They didn't spend a lot of time on that. Most of it was action scenes and getting you to like the characters, which is good, but they didn't spend a lot of time like developing the relationship between Mitch and Stan.
Is Mitch really likable though?
Here's the problem. Okay, let's just dive into it, okay?
Okay.
So, the movie starts with Mitch Rapp. By the way, is a total, like, I wonder if Vince Flynn, like, regretted naming his character something. So, I mean, like, Dirk Pitt.
Well, it's Mitch Rapp. Mitchell Rapp. He just goes by Mitch. So,
well, yeah, still,
but yeah,
like Dirk Pitt. His probably name is like Dirk.
I think as an author, you want something that's pithy that people can just pick up and throw around.
I guess
Alex Cross,
Mike Hammer. Yeah, I suppose
Matt Houston.
But Houston has a different mouthfeel than Rapp.
That you're on your own there.
Okay. Sorry. Mitch Rapp, played by Dylan O'Brien, TV's Teen Wolf. Here's problem number one. I spent half of the movie going, who does this remind me of? This guy looks so familiar. Not because I recognize him, but because he's got the face of somebody that I recognize as seeing in a lot of movies.
My problem with him was that he also looked like the villain.
Yes, exactly.
So it took me a while because I was going back and forth, as we will see in the plot. I went back and forth because at one point I thought, how did Mitch get across the world and then get back without them knowing? And because they identified it was somebody they knew, so I just assumed it was him. So the movie did some good misdirection.
Yeah. So I finally figured it out. Dylan O'Brien is the C. Thomas Howell of 2017. Just watch a little bit of this movie again. This is Soul Man. This is Pony Boy. This is Red Dawn. This guy is C. Thomas Howell reincarnated, although the first one I think is still alive. Everything about him screams C. Thomas Howell. In the next movie, Mitch Rapp will be in blackface. And it will seem fine. Anyway, we should watch that movie.
I think that movie will not hold up well.
Oh, no, of course it won't.
Also, I believe now it's also probably horribly offensive.
I bet you it's not even available streaming.
An entire movie in blackface. I can't imagine what would go wrong.
Well, it worked for Ted Danson still working. Anyway, so.
Is he?
He is. He just got another TV show.
Yeah, but again.
Not in blackface.
How long was he gone?
Well, maybe, you know, but
he came and went. He had Cheers, and then he had some. Wasn't he on a vet show with Mary Steenburgen?
Yes.
And then I only know that. I don't know anything about the show. I just remember that detail that it existed. And then,
was it a vet or a doctor? He was a doctor. Remember. Yeah.
I'm conflating All in the Family. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a Dr. Quinn medicine man. Anyway, so Mitch Rapp, C. Thomas Howell, and his girlfriend, Katrina Harper, are on vacation in Ibiza, Spain. Moments after Katrina accepts Mitch's proposal of marriage, a jihadist cell lands on the beach and begins to attack the civilians with assault rifles. Amid the carnage, Rapp frantically attempts to find Katrina, but his fiancée is killed by terrorists.
So this makes no sense to me, by the way.
Well, it says, I think, in the plot at some point that he was killed. In the synopsis here, or maybe the one on IMDb, that the jihadist goal was to say that anybody could be killed, blah, blah, blah. None of that is in this movie. It's very traumatic. It's also unclear why he's the only one who survives.
Yeah, especially because the one guy, well, I have a theory about that. My thinking was that they wounded a bunch of the males and they killed all the females because that way the males have to suffer.
Yeah, that would be great if it was stated, or if one of those guys was the villain of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my suspicion was that was kind of because the later on they make the point that they killed women and children and that's what they were going to pay for.
I guess.
It was retributive. Is that a word?
Retributive.
It was retribution. I don't know. Anyway, but, what got me was, okay, it was Ibiza, so yeah. Fine. But ostensibly, they were going after America because America bombed them, and Ibiza's not America. So I'm really confused.
You'd think you'd run into, but I mean, you run into EU people, but you'd run into primarily the Brits vacationing in Ibiza.
Exactly.
I'd never been to Ibiza before, but I hear it. It's spectacular.
So that was confusing. So anyway, that was just one element that I shook my head at. But again, whatever. It's their universe, so they're.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Again, in their universe, it's a big American hotspot.
Yeah, it moves. It's a intense action scene, and it moves. And then 18 months later,
I appreciated the bullets in the pool. By the way.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was well done, you know.
No, it's a very pretty movie.
Yeah, it was well executed, if you pardon the pun.
Bill Alfa Romeo ad, but
oh yeah, that's true for sure. Okay, so 18 months later, Rap, now consumed by his desire for vengeance, frequents an internet message board where the terrorist responsible for his girlfriend's murder quizzes Rap on aspects of Islam and jihad. And he has secured an invitation to meet him face-to-face in Libya. So Rap prepares to take his vengeance on the man responsible. But before he can kill the terrorist, the cell is suddenly ambushed by U.S. Special Forces. Upset over the perception that he has been denied his vengeance, Rap repeatedly stabs the terrorist, which I thought was actually pretty good. And he's dragged out by U.S. forces. And they take him to a CIA safe house. And he undergoes 30 days of debriefing before being offered a chance by CIA agent Irene Kennedy, played by Sana Lathan. We know her from Contagion and Family Guy. To join a black operations unit codenamed Orion. Its head is Stan Hurley, Michael Keaton, a former U.S. Navy SEAL and Cold War veteran who trains Rap and other potential recruits in asymmetric warfare. I really appreciated the CIA director. Did you recognize him?
Yes.
David Hercule Suchet
Poirot, right?
PBS's Hercule Poirot.
Yeah, no, I recognize him. Yeah. The voice I recognized before the face.
Oh, absolutely.
It also took me a while because I was thrown aback. I saw his face and I had a vapor lock of like, I've got to redirect my brain or this is going to just going to derail the movie. So,
well, and he's got to find work because the popular Hercule Poirot is now played by Kenneth Branagh. I think Death on the Nile is coming out very soon.
Sorry.
I know. By the way, I tried to watch the 70s Death in the Nile.
That's the equivalent of casting Kevin Costner as Robin Hood.
I know. But did you see the new...
No.
Murder on the Orient Express? It's worth watching.
Okay.
It's actually better than the 70s movie.
Then I'm in. I'm happy to hear that because I have some nostalgia for the Agatha Christie stuff. So
yeah, I thought it was well done. It's nice. It's goofy, but like I said, the 70s movie does not hold up for me. And the 70s, Death in the Nile, that has Peter Ustinov, I think, plays Poirot. And you've got Mia Farrow and Betty Davis and a whole bunch of serious actors from the time. Lois Childs, I think.
I think it just dragged on.
Oh, it was just interminable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worst. I've seen it, but yes. Yeah. I would agree with you. It also, it's really difficult to go back and watch those really old movies because then all your brain is doing is like, well, if you had a cell phone, none of this would matter.
You could never do that now.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway. So, okay.
Blackface.
Yeah. Meanwhile, word comes down through intelligence channels that weapons-grade nuclear material has disappeared from a decommissioned Russian nuclear facility. The material in question appears to be heading to Iranian hardliners who are upset with the Iranian government's nuclear deal with the United States. Remember when you used to have one of those? Woo! Okay. While verifying the sale of the nuclear material in Poland, the plutonium is intercepted by a third party who eliminates the sellers before vanishing into the crowd. It's also a fun little scene there.
Yeah.
In Virginia, Hurley sees news reports about the incident in Poland and tentatively identifies the perpetrator as a former Navy SEAL and Orion operative believed to have been killed in action and is now going by the codename Ghost. Ghost is played by Taylor Kitsch. And where do we know him from? I didn't even get this far in my due diligence.
Nope. I have nothing.
He's some sort of new hottie.
Is he?
I think so. He's been in something like, I want to say like Glee or something like that. Or maybe he was in...
Justin Timberlake's big face shows up on my screen.
Maybe he was in like the Maze Runner book or movies or something. I'm not sure.
Palmer, Justin Timberlake, exclusively on Apple Plus. That's just like the Justin Timberlake's giant head on my big giant monitor.
That's the sequel to Wasilla, starring it's Jay-Z Chazay. Taylor Kitsch also sounds like a made-up name.
IMDb picture makes him look like he's 5 years old. X-Men Origins, Battleship, John Carter, Battleship. Friday Night Lights.
He was the titular John Carter, right?
Waco. He played David Koresh. That's where I know
Waco is good. One with one of the Culkins, Kieran Culkin or Rory Culkin? I think Rory Culkin is the one I'm thinking.
Yes.
Great. He is a great actor. He's amazing. He was in Lords of Chaos, which is a movie we'll have to talk about. Anyway, okay.
Let's see. American Assassin, The Dig before that, True Detective.
What was he like a child star in some sort of Disney thing or something? Okay.
I don't know about Disney, but he was in a bunch of episodes of True Detective, which I started watching, by the way.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to talk about that during housekeeping.
Savages, Friday Night Lights, Snakes on a Plane.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he's...
Kyle XY. So,
Titular Kyle XY?
No.
No.
No, he was known as Male Camper.
Oh, never mind. Okay, so he was a... probably not even a speaking role.
He's done some... Oh, he produced several of the episodes of Waco.
Oh, well, cool.
Executive producer.
Okay, so anyway... he's our bad guy called the Ghost. And yes, he looks remarkably or too similar to our hero, Mitch. It is confusing. Okay,
I have to stop you because this stands out. This is makes me laugh. Okay. Other works in his personal details, modeled for Diesel and Abercrombie and Fitch.
Ah, there you go.
Which I can absolutely see.
So maybe he's like a pop star, a pop tart kind of guy, as well as being actor, model. Did he sing?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Okay.
Okay. So Hurley's team is sent to Turkey to intercept the buyer Ghost is working for. In Istanbul, not Constantinople, Hurley's team is identified and the attempted intercept of the device trigger fails. Rap pursues the seller to his apartment and after killing the man, retrieves his laptop. By the way, I'm yada-yadding some fun action.
The trapping the dogs in the car was quite witty, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just fine.
Some good trade craft.
Yep.
I don't know how he managed to climb up 5 flights of apartment, but whatever.
He's good like that. The information leads the team to Rome, where Orion operatives identify a nuclear physicist needed to craft the nuclear material into a functional nuclear weapon. While in Rome.
But they didn't find out the scientist yet.
No. Well, while in Rome, Rap uncovers, or cares. Actually, this is not the best
synopsis
either, because we are introduced to CIA agent Annika, played by Shiva Nagar. Now, I'm going to stop this right there. Shiva Nagar also derailed me in this movie. Because she looked like somebody totally familiar, again, from the 80s and early 90s. Can you guess?
I got nothing.
Okay. Shiva Nagar is 2017's Jamie Gertz.
Oh.
We got Less Than Zero. We got Lost Boys. We got Still Standing. She is Jamie Gertz. Let me tell you. Jamie Gertz and C. Thomas Howell could play the Mitch and Annika
prequel.
Postquel. In their retirement days. Postquel.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the super sequel.
the super sequel with a cape and everything.
Yeah. So anyway, along the way, Rap uncovers her as a foreign agent for Iran.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this skips the whole point of their spycraft.
Oh, I know. Yes.
There's a whole bunch of stuff that. So are you doing this? Is the synopsis?
This is the synopsis. Yes.
Okay. All right. Carry on.
Yeah. Again, this yada yada is a ton of stuff. Fun stuff. So he uncovers Annika as a foreign agent for Iran. She explains that she's working for the mainstream Iranian faction, which is attempting to stop the hardliners from acquiring the nuclear material. During the meeting between Hurley and an Iranian contact, a ghost ambushes them and kills the contact and captures Hurley. So, yeah. Why Hurley is in the field also is crazy. He should be back.
Because it was his protege.
Yeah, but I guess. But I guess they didn't. It's not his movie, I guess. So they're not really spending a lot of time.
No, they had to set up the gravity of how badass Stan is.
Of course.
Because in the books, he is a badass.
Yeah. So at the CIA safe house in Rome, Annika is being moved under guard by two Mossad agents when Rap intercepts the car and frees her. By the way, this scene was great because basically just after he uncovers her as a sort of a mole
and nearly murders her.
Yes. He immediately figures out, oh, no, he's got to rescue her because now she's got to help him. So, I mean, basically, they are just barely out the building for taking her away to her Mossad, probably death. And already he's rescuing her in a fun way. So working together, they locate the subterranean headquarters Ghost is using to build the nuclear device. And after infiltrating the tunnels, Rap locates and frees the badly injured Hurley. However, Annika is captured by the Ghost, and she kills herself with Ghost's gun before Ghost escapes onto a boat with the nuke. Now, so I guess she won't be showing up in the super sequel. Well, maybe they can both do that, like the Force images after Mitch dies, and they can both show up as ghosts.
Well, they had all that VR technology, so maybe he's got an image of her.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, this also yada yada is... the fact that Michael Keaton is a fun torture victim. It's just,
yeah,
he's chewing scenery while being tortured.
I actually thought he did a really good job.
Oh, me too. I liked it. I liked everything he did. Is he hammy? Sure. But I think his character is supposed to be a little unhinged.
Which
and also
came through.
tough as nails, particularly fingernails.
Ugh. Actually couldn't watch that part.
Oh, I know. It was like he's all cracking wise, except that every couple seconds I'm like, oh, if they take another pair of pliers out, it's like I have to avert my gaze.
I didn't look, I just listened. I was like, nope, I'll wait till this is done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have any, there's no shame in that. I would nope the torture scenes.
Except listening to it really loud and surround sound, I'm sure the neighbors were appreciating me screaming in my living room.
Oh, yeah,
make it exactly. Stop.
So then we have the most, the final set piece is Mitch and Ghost are out on a boat. This is like straight out of Jason Bourne material where they have to fight on a boat. And I thought it was actually really well done when they're in, below deck.
Yeah.
And the boat is going over the waves and they're getting thrown about. And so I have to fight in between getting like bodily moved by the boat. It's great. I mean, I thought that part was actually quite fun. But the boat with the nuke is actually headed straight toward the 5th Fleet or whatever, 7th Fleet.
I think it was the 6th Fleet.
6th Fleet, sorry. Well, I knew it was between the two.
It really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Because he wants to nuke the 6th Fleet. But they figured, and the 6th Fleet, the carrier, the destroyer or something on there is going to bomb the shit out of this little boat because of course it doesn't want to get, but that will of course detonate the bomb, which is a bad deal.
So Brother Drew's not here to talk about nuclear physics and the nuclear effects. A couple things. If you fired at a nuclear weapon and it exploded, it's going to have the same effect as if it exploded on its own. So you still have the same problem. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they just wanted to explode further away from the boats.
I think the distance is pretty irrelevant for the scale of the explosion.
Well, again,
I'm just guessing, but that's one problem I have with this. The other problem is that the entire physics and method of it exploding underwater and what would happen, and I suspect the effects would be both worse and more devastating, much further reaching than it was.
Well, you know, in the sequel, one of the things, again, like the Clive Cussler thing, says the world has changed. They have to account for the fact that you can't get fish anymore in the Mediterranean.
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So basically this is solved by, of course, killing Ghost, and then basically being told by Mitch to throw the bomb off the boat. So he throws the bomb off the boat. He's rescued by the helicopter. By Stan. Stan rescues Mitch. With the helicopter, they fly away, managing to not get killed in the tremendous blast that happens when the bomb explodes.
The wake force from the explosion.
Yes. But it's all very, very
dramatic.
Well done. Fine. You know, you had great, great ending. I thought the effects of the bomb exploding looked good. Like, I don't know if that's how it would look, but it certainly looked like it's reasonable. But in the aftermath of the blast, Hurley is recovering from his injuries and notes that Rapp is on vacation in Dubai. While watching news reports indicating that the Iranian faction, which tried to obtain the nuclear weapon, will win the presidential election and is blaming the nuclear attack on the CIA. In Dubai, the faction candidate and his escorts enter an elevator in which Rapp is already present, smiling his C. Thomas Howell grin.
Well done.
Yes. And then cut to credits.
Elevator doors close.
Yeah. So, it's fine. It was 1 hour 45 or something?
111 minutes.
Yeah. Perfectly fine.
A little under 2 hours.
Yeah. Perfectly fine movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't too violent. It wasn't too explodey. The fingernail thing was a little cringy. Dad probably don't watch this.
Well, no, just don't watch that part.
To turn away during. Yeah. Turn that. The jumper cable scene was fun. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's all of that stuff. It had all of the, like, a lot of the gritty stuff, but not so much that it was, say, like a torture porn sort of thing.
It struck all the right notes. The lyrics just weren't complete.
Yeah, it's a PG-13 movie. I mean, this wasn't made to horrify anybody. This is made that you cheer at the end, that you've got basically an extra governmental assassin who's going to kill an Iranian official in a Dubai elevator.
Well, Stan makes the big point in the beginning that if they're found, they're not citizens.
Yeah.
And they won't be rescued.
Yeah.
Which is what Ghost was upset about anyway.
There was a lot of you stab somebody with a knife and you hit the hilt of it, or pommel or whatever it is, the bottom of the knife, with your other hand to jam it in. Lots of that maneuver. It was interesting.
Great, unless you hit bone.
Well, that's why you jam it in harder. Jam and repeat. Mm. Okay, so Brother Jay, any other notes, by the way?
No.
Okay.
I really didn't take hardly any notes other than, again, I said, you know, oh, look, Keaton's doing Keaton face with the sideways, like, lip curl triangle face thing.
My only initial notes were, see Thomas Howell and Jamie Gertz. I finally figured it out. I was like, yes, I have to remember this. I have to write it down something. So what's your verdict?
This is a fine movie. It's probably it's a B movie at best, B minus C plus, somewhere in there. It's entertaining. It's not probably rewatchable much.
Nah.
You know, I don't know that it would benefit from seeing it again.
Careful examination. It will do this no favors.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting if and when the second one comes out, where they go with the story. Because I think they could make a very clear separation from the novels and make a, I think, what could be a good series. this is an okay start, but I think there's plenty of things they could have done better. And, you know, again, Mitch is much younger in this movie than he is in the books. So,
yeah, because, again, it seemed like this guy was like maybe, I mean, he seems like 14. But if he's 30, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
And you would think you wouldn't have that kind of skill. But again, he's got passion.
Baggage.
He has trained himself in the ways of the warrior to defeat the jihadist worldwide. He's a man with a mission.
The synopsis skipped all kinds of stuff, like the integrating at the or infiltrating the bank to get the physicist, and the Mitch in the beginning of the book in the beginning of the movie. Mitch in the beginning of the movie was clearly unstable and angry because he was beating other people up much beyond normal sparring in the gym. And he was throwing knives at the back of a door in his apartment at his target. So he was a little unhinged.
Yeah, he's going to lose his membership privileges at the Golds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I give him credit, because the acting was... They all really were in on this acting.
Yeah, they committed.
Yeah. Because the look on Mitch's face when his nemesis is the bullet hole in his head. He's devastated.
Yes.
And then stabs him a whole bunch. Stabby, stabby. So,
yeah.
So, it's a fine movie. I mean, if you want to kill a couple hours, this is not a terrible way to do it.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah.
Now, the movie we replaced was Reversal of Fortune, which we'll have to watch before it leaves HBO or Amazon or whatever.
I actually have it on DVD somewhere. So
yeah, so do I, actually.
I own it.
Because I remember liking this movie a lot. I've seen it relatively recently. One of the reasons I want to watch it is we could do a whole conversation about Ron Silver.
Yes.
But
I also believe that we saw this in the movie theater together.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Not American Assassin, no. Reversal of Fortune.
Yep. So, okay, are we on housekeeping?
Movie theaters.
No. Remember those? Do you have any desire to go back?
Well, yes and no. I mean, as we've discussed, I rarely go to movies anymore anyway, just because I hate people and dealing with people's antics at movie theaters get on my nerves. So,
and it's pricey.
Yeah, I don't. So the one theater here was a luxury. Well, there was a couple theaters here that were luxury theaters that had reserved seating and fancy gourmet popcorn and blah, 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 which was fine. And then they got bought out by like AMC, of course. So but now most of those are closed. So I don't have any desire to rush back into a movie theater. It's fine. I mean, it'll be a nice thing eventually, because there's some things that do benefit in a movie theater.
Absolutely.
Dune, I think, would benefit in a movie theater.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Hang on just a second. Let me take a quick break, and then I'll join you for housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
And we're back. Chicago Line 2, you're on the air. Got to pour one out for Larry King, Hank Aaron,
Cicely Tyson,
Cloris Leachman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cloris Leachman.
Frau Blücher.
Nurse Diesel.
Yeah. Yeah. To have that name, Cloris Leachman, as an actress, that's fantastic. And she was in everything forever.
Yeah. She was recently in like one of those Sharknado things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She worked since the 40s, she worked.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So,
anyway. You know, we just got to keep an eye on Betty White.
And Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
You know, all those 60s rock stars are going down soon. You know, you think about how many of them are around, you know.
A ray of sunshine.
Well, I'm just saying, you know. Yeah, so let's see, housekeeping. I was fortunate enough today. I got what Dr. Wonders called my first Fauci ouchie.
Oh, congrats. At work or outside?
At work, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because I'm not quite old enough to get one if just walking off the street, because they're still doing 65 or older. But being a first responder, They had some spots available, and I was fortunate to get one of the very few so far. I mean, eventually, well, everybody will trickle through, but I didn't want to say no.
Yeah. Good on you. Yeah. So,
and then
when did you get it?
This morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, I guess. So, they tell me, or you have told me, I think maybe that tomorrow I will have a sore arm and maybe a headache, and be kind of tired.
Maybe some people are just fine. Did you get the Moderna or the Pfizer?
I got the Pfizer.
So, yeah, I mean, if you react like I do, yeah, you have the worst headache you've ever experienced.
Oh well, I don't want that.
But maybe not. I mean, a lot of people didn't. Yeah, so
fun.
I get my second dose Thursday, I think.
Sweet. Yeah, my second dose is on the 19th. Be great.
Provided they show up.
Yeah, well, of course. I was listening to the, is it the America? No, it must not be. It must be, God, I forget what the podcast is, but it's like a Guardian podcast where they were talking to a guy in Germany about the deal between UK and AstraZeneca and how the EU is feeling pretty pissed because, you know, if you look at the way like the Pfizer vaccine made in America, none of that, because of an executive order by our former president, none of that can be shipped, including to Canada. So all the Canadian stuff has to come from the EU. And then there's a certain amount of vaccine being created in Great Britain, but that is also not being shipped over to the EU. And yet a lot of the EU's vaccine is being shipped over to the UK because of the deals they made. And the EU's like, why would we send the vaccines that we need here over to you guys who won't share your vaccines with us? It seems like a one-way street that does not favor us. So, you know, anyway,
well, tell them to buy some GameStop stock. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's a whole nother thing. Actually, yesterday or just this morning, even I, popped a little Chrome window on my computer just to see GameStop stock, just to kind of see where it went. Cause you know, if it can be immediately flushed down the toilet, we could see it would, one thing would have happened, but it didn't. So, and now there's a whole bunch of other things, AMC and, did you see what is it? The, Doggy coin?
Doji.
Doji coin. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. It's like
$6 billion.
Yeah. So, and that, by the way, that's not to punish anybody. That's just to do it.
Yeah.
Like, let's see if we can do this because it's all fucking fake.
Yeah. Elon Musk is on board.
Yeah. By the way, Elon Musk, who Tesla has fucking amazing, like their stock is huge. That's a bubble, man. I don't think they've made much of a profit at all with Tesla stuff, but their stock is out of sight.
Yeah, Elon Musk though is very clear that he thinks the short selling is not legit. He thinks it shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah, short selling is such a fucking. I mean, that's why I was really pissed in our little text thread yesterday, because on one hand the hedge funds are doing the short selling, which is a legal activity full of shenanigans.
Yes.
It's the kind of stuff that got us into the 2008 global financial disaster. Okay.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And the Reddit guys, like, you know, these guys who are, you know, I think primarily chaos agents, they're like, let's stick it to the man, or in this case, stick it to the rich guys. They saw an opportunity and they did, but how they did it was just buying stock. It's just simply, I went and bought stock. There's nothing nefarious about that at all, except they did it all together.
There's also nothing illegal about it.
No, not at all. And how can you regulate against it? But, you know, of course.
Imagine that we can't regulate against it.
Yeah,
against doing something. Because Wall Street didn't want regulations.
It's so fucking amazing because, like, in my, again, knowing very little about all this, but yet having an opinion because, you know, I'm me. You know, like, it's like the mortgage crisis. Like, I buy a house, I get a mortgage, right? My bank, who owns the mortgage, right? They can sell that mortgage to anybody they want. Doesn't matter. It doesn't actually even affect me because I'm still sending money to somebody. And when I've sent them enough money, they will give me the deed to my house, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that part doesn't matter. Buying a mortgage is a simple like security transfer, right?
It's transactional. However,
bundling all the mortgages and selling tranches or slices of that bundle such that in 2008, if they foreclosed on your house, they had to unspool this huge tangled thread to figure out if they even knew who owned it. Like, you know, if it's all sold as part of a thing, and that's why hedge funds are such a fucking, I mean, it's the worst. It's, if you don't like capitalism, which by the way, I'm not anti-capitalist necessarily, but this is the ugly part of capitalism. This is the people just get ground. Like they don't care about people. It's just about money.
Well, and the very people that are screaming that this shouldn't happen are the very people that didn't want the government stepping in to regulate it in the first place.
Oh, no.
So
yeah.
They can all sit down.
Well, and as a lot of the clever tweeters are saying, you know, you have to be mindful that the hedge funds, they employ fives of people who are also going to be affected by this.
Yes. Well, you know, the rich people are upset that the ostensibly not rich people figured out how to game the system the way they've been gaming the system, and now they cry foul because they don't want it to affect their wealth.
Because,
and guess what?
Because they got caught in a game they knew they were playing.
Yes.
Like, it is, like, if you buy, this is why they're, like, when Robin Hood's like, well, we needed to shut down the transactions to avoid everybody losing money.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, you know what? If I buy a stock for $300, I buy one share of GameStop for $320, right? The most I can lose in that transaction is my $320. But if I'm a hedge fund and I short sell that stock, I can lose an infinite amount of money.
Yes.
And you know that going in. Fuck you for playing that game. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
It's just gambling.
It's the same thing when the economy crashed when Obama took over and they were bailing out Wall Street because AIG, too big to fail. Like, well, okay, except that you're rewarding bad behavior and you're not regulating the behavior that got you there in the first place. So, nope, nobody cares. Nobody walks away from this punished.
No, and they don't think they did anything wrong.
Nope. Well, technically, they may not have done anything wrong.
Well, again,
morally is a different issue entirely, but legally,
I mean, it's sort of like the Enron thing. It's like people lost their pensions.
Yes.
If I don't want to say this as to be careful. Hopefully this will not happen, of course. But I have actually a defined benefit pension. I am 5 years away from retirement. If they told me that, oh yeah, my retirement had invested in GameStop, whatever, or what, like Jimmy's hedge fund, and yeah, that collapsed, or it was a bunch of Enron stock and it collapsed, and you're not going to get any of your pension money, or you're going to get like pennies on the dollar or whatever, and I'm going to have to continue working until I'm like 80 years old after being promised 30 years ago, 25 years ago. Oh, fuck them. It's a little harder with the pension plan we have, but we're underfunded like most pension plans are. So,
yeah, it's a concern. And, you know, since this Senate doesn't look like it's any more likely to allow us, the Democrats, to have any kind of control, it appears like we're in for 4 more years of the same bullshit. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go too far into the political thing. I don't want the most left of the Democrat Party to start, like, if they had full power, it would be a little bit of a rude shock. And I think it would be, I'm concerned about what would happen. However, I don't think we have to worry too much about that because you're right. There's still gridlock.
Yeah.
It's still going to be rough. And you still have people. We can't even have people. People are moving their offices in Congress because they're afraid of the congressman next to them.
congressperson.
Yeah, sorry. I love AOC's thing when she talked about how, you know, she's on the finance committee. So,
yes.
She thinks maybe looking into the GameStop thing might be worthwhile. And then Ted Cruz says, I agree. And she's like, I don't hear about you. 2 weeks ago, you tried to have me murdered. So you can solve this problem by resigning.
I love her.
I know, me too.
I do. I love her. I will give her money when she runs. So I love the idea of her. I love that how smart she is and that she just doesn't care about the BS. So I respect that. It's the kind of government we need.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
So yeah, if we still have a government in 4 years.
Oh, we'll have a government. I'm just seeing how long this QAnon, the next QAnon is now calling himself E. It's like, fuck you. I'm E. I don't realize there's a lot of E's in the world, but come on. You can't take my letter. It's a fucking vowel. Keep Q.
That's okay. It'll end up the same way as the Proud Boys. It was just a bunch of gay pictures on the internet. So,
And of course, I love the Proud Boys imploding. The leader of the Proud Boys has they've sort of doxed him as, oh yeah, he's been informing for the government since he got caught in 2012 doing shit. So he's going to flip on you guys. Everybody's flipping.
Everybody. On a ship.
And then that Congress lady who is just the worst. It's like,
was it Marjorie Taylor Greene? Yes. Is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so sorry. I don't mean to be a podcast. Will send me into anger spiral. And in my delicate condition of being freshly vaccinated, I don't want to put my body to that.
You don't want to stress your body. You want to stay calm.
No.
So let's see. Last week, boyfriend Jesse managed to finish the installation of the new garage opener. So that's a victory. Yay! I'm so happy with that. We don't actually ever have to turn the lights on in the garage ever again because this thing is bright enough that I think we could probably take a magnifying glass and set fires with it. So
that's a good thing.
But that was a huge victory. Yay. Still unpacking. I'm going to be unpacking forever. And then last night, the ice machine auger motor seized up in the refrigerator. So that's my next project.
I hate ice makers just for that reason. That's why I hate cars, because shit is going to break.
So
are your blades metal or are they plastic?
Well, it's not the auger. It's the motor
still. Because that's the other thing that will fail.
It's metal blades.
Okay, yeah.
I know, because I put my hand in there and I was like, holy crap, that's sharp. So,
yeah.
But the motor just, clearly we have utilized it a great deal. So it is completely seized up. So,
how new is the fridge?
It's 6 years old.
Okay, so it's probably not. Well, I don't know. I don't have a guess. Like, I have an old fridge that has a very standard ice maker, so getting parts for it or getting a new one is fairly easy. We replaced the motor on that too, but
I just ordered it off Amazon. So
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's going to be a pain, but we've already pulled the old motor out, so it's just annoying in the short term. You know, first world problems. I have to reach into the bin to get ice. Ooh.
Yes. I've been doing that for years. I've got a towel shoved in the little hole that the ice would fall out of. Like, as if I was the Anderzoo household.
That's funny.
Because I'd have to replace the door the way it's set up. That little mechanism under there, in order to fix it, you have to either, like JB Weld some, like, yourself a new thing to attach the whole door, like flap assembly, or you throw a towel in there and just reach in.
So, okay.
We're a reach in family. Eventually I'll need a new fridge.
They're expensive.
They are expensive. And there are choices you have to make. And yeah.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I just want a damn stand up freezer, and that's impossible at this point. So,
Well,
once COVID started last March and everybody started buying all the frozen foods, there are no longer any on market. And the manufacturing plants that were both manufacturing the refrigerant coolant and the refrigerators aren't in factories producing anymore. So, yay. Yeah. So it's just been, and so I went from having like two full-size refrigerators with freezers and a full stand-up freezer to one French door refrigerator freezer and a refrigerator freezer-ish. So it's been a,
Do you find,
again, first world problems.
Yeah, what do you think about the French door?
I don't care for it.
Yeah, we have it at having, work now, and I don't think I care for it either.
Yeah, the newer one we have, the one that Derek got a couple years ago, the freezer's on the bottom and the refrigerator's on top. And I really like, and the bottom slides out.
Yeah.
It's not, so I really, really like that because I'm not in the, I wasn't in the freezer anywhere near as much as I was in the fridge.
Yeah.
And because of the width of it, the fridge was cavernous.
Yeah.
So I could put,
that's what I'm looking for. But the one we have at work is not that way.
Yeah. The side by side, the French door one we have in my kitchen now it's fine. I mean, it's a fine refrigerator, but it's not, I don't like it. But again, it's there.
The one we have at work is fridge, French door at the top, and then bottom freezer. But it's like the freezer on the, you know, when growing up having a, you know, two door freezer on one side, fridge on the other side, you're used to having all that shelves. And when you have the pull out drawer.
Yeah. It's just a big bucket of crap.
Yeah. It's not as intuitive how to organize stuff in there.
Well, and mine, the back of it is tilted because I assume the motor is in the bottom.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's probably not even a full container. So some of the stuff, I have to get very creative in how it's like Jenga, or not Jenga, Tetris. Yeah. It's freezer Tetris. I have to.
Yep.
Think, oh.
And then once you Tetris in there, you got to Jenga it out of there.
Well, and then you hope that you don't like wedge the door closed by something being stuck inside. So,
yeah, or not get the door fully closed. Although I think at work, the new fridge there actually has an alarm that will tell you. But like our fridge now is such that it's pretty easy. Well, I think I told you when we went to San Diego and came back and I thought our whole freezer fridge was broken, but no, it just had been slightly ajar for days. Yeah.
The freezer and refrigerator door and my French door fridge downstairs in the kitchen don't close on their own. And even if you throw it closed, it doesn't close. You have to physically force it closed. So that's been a culture shift because the big stainless steel one, it's in the garage now with the freezer on bottom and fridge on top. That door is so damn heavy. My biggest fear is that it's actually going to break off the hinge, opening itself backwards because it's so heavy. But that thing coming towards you, it will close. It will close on you.
Well, what I want is actually something that has a gigantic lever on the outside that engages some sort of teeth in the, you know, because I want to know it's closed. It's not getting open. Because again, all it takes is, you know, I don't know if you know, a child or maybe an old guy in the middle of the night who will grab something and then, you know, kick the door closed instead of being careful with it. And maybe you have stuff shoved in there so it sticks out a little bit further than it should, or something in the door.
Back.
Yeah, something in the door kind of leans over a little bit so that, yeah, it looks like it's closed. But
yeah,
not so much.
Yeah, I feel your pain. So, you know, it's progress. So between that and the toilet that Jesse had to install, that didn't fit upstairs and that whole mayhem. So it's been, you know, it's first world problems.
Yeah. New house problems.
Yeah. But I did get my little glass desk chair mat. So,
and it was like shipped like all in one gigantic piece.
Yes.
Did you have to figure out how to get into your room around corners and stuff?
No. Cause I just turned it on. No, I turned it on its side.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, hypotenuse, right?
But does it look like it's going to be sturdy?
Oh, it's sturdy. It's a little disconcerting though, because so it's a sheet of glass and it's tempered and it's got some kind of coating on it. And it's actually, compared to my old chair mat, and because I have rollerblade wheels on this office chair, I love it. Like, it's the best thing I've ever had because I can move freely with the least of resistance. The bad thing is that if I'm not really careful, the chair will just squirt out from underneath me across the room.
There's that, yeah.
So then I will be falling on a big pane of glass, which supposedly can take 1,000 square feet or 1,000 pounds of force. They say 10,000, but I think that's a big fat lie. I don't buy it, but whatever. The weird thing about it is, so it's a sheet of glass, but it's not like 8 inches thick. It's reasonably thin. So it gives when you walk on it. Oh. Because it's a piece of glass, and that's really because it's carpet in here. It's not hardwood. So the glass flexes as I walk on it, and it's truly bizarre. It wrecks my brain every time.
Yeah, glass shouldn't flex.
It does, though. I mean, big panels.
I know. Yeah. I'm just saying that it's like...
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So, and the dog does not like it, which is fine because he shouldn't be on it anyway, but... no, I'm really digging it. It was expensive, but it was an extravagance, especially because I'm working from home so much.
I was going to say, it's a business expense as much as anything.
Yeah.
I mean, good, don't try to tell the IRS that, but.
Oh, no. But it was just like one of my monitors because I bought 2 TVs to use as monitors since my home office because I just couldn't handle my laptop.
Yeah.
But one of them is going out and it's not even a year old. And of course... Vizio won't let me make a warranty claim because nobody in Oregon can accept a claim because COVID. So I'm like, well, the warranty is going to expire if I can't make a claim. So how is this going to work? So it's just annoying.
Bizarre. I saw a story in the news that that your mayor pepper sprayed somebody.
Which mayor?
The Portland mayor. See a guy?
Yes.
Yeah. I think the other day he pepper sprayed somebody in the face.
Ted Wheeler.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Not my mayor anymore, by the way. I don't live
in Portland. Oh, that's true. Yes. I'm sorry.
I'm sure I have a...
Can you run for Sandy City Council?
I'm sure that I could. Not going to happen. Not in a million billion years. I'll just run for a school board seat.
Go all the way with Brother Jay. Yeah, so, yeah, less chance, I think, having no kids to get in the school board.
No. I have no desire for politics. It's not my gig. So
take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew.